And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Thursday, Instruction Thursday. We missed last week. It was the Players' Championship. Sorry about that. It was in my backyard. We had enough to do last week. The guy that was down here for the Players, his student, Brian Harmon, almost got it done, T19. Just had to have Scotty, the number one player in the world, just go out there and shoot 64 to ruin the parade. But it was a great week. The weather was fantastic. He's back up in Sea Island. You might notice he's got a jacket on. I had mine on coming in because the weather has turned. They got the tournament just in time, and it was chilly here this morning. Chilly up in Sea Island. My man Justin Parsons joined me. Welcome back to the pod, buddy.
Thanks, Travis. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, a little bit nippy this morning. Beautiful last couple of days. And as you say, we got the players in time. We had a couple of years where we had strong winds and all sorts of other things that stopped us playing, but we got to see a great showpiece of golf. That it's a very special venue, it's a very special place, and a very special winner, I think, too.
Yeah, well said. I mean, the golf course just continues to shine and show its versatility, I think, every single year. And particularly this year, the weather, we finally got a break down here. I mean, we've had a couple years of just heavy rain, of course, COVID before that. So they deserve that one, you know, some really good weather and a fantastic finish. You know, I was talking to Chris Cuomo on the phone yesterday, and we brought up Scottie Scheffler, and he mentioned something to me. He says, you know, it's really cool right now in the strokes gain era. You know, Tiger, we had a hard time measuring, you know, statistically. Like, we knew he was great, but we know now strokes gain, where we can see the incremental gains and those kinds of things. He says it's really something, you know, when you look at Scheffler, just like how good can someone be, you know, from a strokes gain perspective and how dominant. We see him tee to green every single week. Now the putter maybe starts to wake up a little bit. So I kind of found myself kind of going there and looking back and just how dominant he has been with his ball striking. Of course, he makes the run, shoots 64 on Sunday, and he gets back-to-back Players Championships, the first time that's ever happened. And, of course, for you, I would have to say a little not bittersweet. I know you were going for Brian Harmon, your longtime student, who just played fantastic golf, T19 or minus 19, finished second. Brian Harmon, your boy, he's playing some special golf. It's starting to look back like when he won the Open Championship just a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was speaking to his agent this morning. You guys might have seen him. He was with him on the Sunday that he won the Open. And, you know, we're sort of saying, like, he's playing the type of golf that he really played as a junior coming through the ranks. So playing the type of golf he played in college, like almost like getting towards being like a little bit more of a dominant golfer. And it's, you know, it's always interesting, Travis, you've worked with players as well. Brian's, you know, matured through, as we, you know, as many of us are fortunate to do. He's had three kids. His wife Kelly does a terrific job. He's comfortable as a dad, and he's got his home here. And I think he's at a stage in his life where he's fit, strong, able, capable. Mid 30s, he's got a real 5-year window, and he's, you know, he said that to me. You know, let's try and get a little bit quicker, but let's not go too crazy. Let's manage my golf swing, but let's not go too crazy. Let's maintain the short game without trying to change anything within a tremendous pattern. Let's maintain or get incremental gains on and around the greens. And you know, you're seeing somebody. I think, you know, the thing that's been most proud from my standpoint is, you know, when we talk about strokes gained, he's you know, he's beginning to, through two rounds at Bay Hill, he was second in approach. I think through the four rounds at Sawgrass, he was second or third in approach, and that was a department of his game that was, you know, a little bit on the weaker side, just like almost teetering on, you know, the zero, losing a little bit, gaining a little bit. And with the work he's done, I think he's done a really, really good job in, you know, in aligning himself better, creating some better routines, which, you know, we may touch on, and really coordinating his golf swing in a way that will benefit him both from the tee and from the fairways. And you know, I'm really proud of that. And, you know, he's, you know, it's like I'm playing a bit of golf this week in Sea Island with some buddies, and there's nothing better than hitting a really good iron shot and hitting it pin high and hitting it close. Mm-hmm. And it gives him an awful lot of joy as well. So, yeah, you know, long may it continue. I'm proud to be along for the ride.
Yeah, he gained 9 strokes, Justin, at the Players, strokes gained approach. Plus right. 9. Wow.
Yeah.
Arnold Palmer, he was plus 5.6. And the putter woke up, of course, at the Players, he was plus 5.7. You know, one of the areas, we'll get to a swing here in a second. But when I think of Brian Harman, I just think of the first thing that I think of is just this incredible skill set around the greens. I mean, just terrific hands. And we hear that kind of thrown around a little bit, like, well, that guy's got good hands or she's got good hands, right? And it's like, well, what does that really mean when someone has good hands? This is a video I'm gonna put up for those watching on YouTube. Kind of describe what we're looking at here. But this looks like, you know, he's kind of green side, maybe tapered off towards a collection area a little bit.
Yeah.
Got the ball pretty forward, face open, shaft's pretty neutral, and he's just looks like he's kind of slinging it up in the air, not too high, maybe medium trajectory. But what I notice, and I'll let you take it here, is just he lets that club head come in, catch the ball, and then get out of the ground quickly. Mm-hmm. So when you think of Brian Harman, you watch this video, no one watches him hit more short game shots than you. Give my audience an idea of like how this guy practices his short game and what really impresses you.
Well, I think I would always, you know, begin with a really, really good pivot that he has. He's got a great pivot with his long swing. He has a beautiful pivot with his short swing. He's able to turn the corner very well. And when you marry that to the fact that, you know, you see it in his long swing, you probably notice it more in his long swing almost, that he gets the club set up through the plane very, very quickly. You know, we work on that a little bit with his longer stuff, but he gets plenty of loft on the golf club, gets it set up in front of the plane. So really, there's a lot of natural forces at work that are going to allow the golf club to move back down and through as he maintains that pivot, as you can see there. So, you know, he does so many things from a rotational perspective and getting the golf club into a well-balanced place. From where he can let a lot of things go for him. And, you know, in this situation right here, we're making sure that, you know, Brian's a right-handed person, plays golf left-handed, of course. And, you know, he tends to sometimes just sit back onto his trail leg when he's chipping and pitching. And that was something his caddy, Scott Tway, had mentioned to me. He felt he'd been starting to sort of sit back on his left leg in Brian's case. And here we're just making sure he's, you know, he's set nice and forward, even though he's hitting a little flighted shot, you know, again, that you're absolutely right, Travis. About a 23-yard shot,
yeah.
Up out of a collection area. And again, a lot of those forces work with him. He's very confident around the greens. He's been, you know, he's been really doing that sort of thing since he was a junior. And from a practice perspective, yeah, I really try and challenge him more from a performance. And I don't tend to get into the weeds with his technique very much. I'll check some basics and things. And if he's struggling with a shot, we might go and start to revisit it. But, you know, I'll have 3 or 4 little games that I use to just help to sharpen him. You know, they're games that I would have to strip them down if I was going to use them with a 10 handicap or even that, even with myself perhaps, because there's a lot like worse ball and a lot of pressure and things. But, they're little games that I've come up with just to really try and help him to sharpen what is already a very sharp knife.
When you say his pivot, how much is pivoting in the backswing versus the forward swing? Are you talking kind of torso in both directions, or what's the pivot here on this little 20-yard shot?
Well, I think he does a lovely job, and there's some, you know, you and I may well talk about this idea of where the body's going and things. You'll see he goes forward just a tiny little bit in his backswing, so he gets the club moving very well. But I think certainly from a pivot perspective, we're really talking about how he goes around the corner from, let's say, hands getting back down to waist high. He does a really beautiful job of, you know, getting his right shoulder around the corner, getting his chest around the corner, getting that right hip of his around the corner without any real drive. And that's one of the things he does. You know, he'll stay on that trail leg a little bit, and he'll really allow the rotational components to kind of take over. And on occasions, not very often, on occasions that would have him bottom out the low point just a little bit too early. But there's not really generally a problem with strike. It's really more making sure we sharpen those different skills from different places in and around that 30-yard mark.
When you talk about turning and getting around the corner, we'll get to a swing in a minute. I'm not sure there's a handful of people in the world that get the club to turn the corner like Brian Harman in the full swing. I mean, it is really special to watch. We'll get to that here in a second. So when we talk about this guy's got good hands, and you're watching this shot here, and he's just clipping it off the ground. And Brian does this so many times where there's another video. I didn't load it in, but I think he was standing there with Keith Mitchell.
Yes.
And Keith was watching him hit shots. And Brian hit like three or four similar distance, maybe a little longer. And the club head's just getting in the ground and getting out. I mean, just picking it right off the ground perfectly. Yeah. And so to me, when I watch that and I think about good hands, I'm gonna mention a few components. There's an awareness of the club face, we know, number one, right? Like there's a sensitivity of where the face is at address and then where it's pointing at impact. Number two, there's this idea of the low point, right? Or the point of entry and getting the club head on top of the ball. But I think more than that, getting it out of the ground. And when I watch this, and I wish I should have slowed this down a little bit, but if I was to stop this, you know, right at impact and beyond, like when he hits that shot, like there's a little forward lean to the shaft. Mm-hmm. Shortly thereafter, Justin, that club head is getting out of the ground.
Yep.
And so there's this genius of the bottom, of point of entry and getting out of the ground, and the finesse and the education and the hands and the wrists that takes. To me, that's where great hands really shines. How would you react to that?
Yeah, I think something that I think all of us could probably take away. I don't think he hits a short game shot without testing the club hitting the ground first. And he'll take a few practice swings, but those practice swings around the green are all designed to, okay, I'm going to hit the ground like this. I'm going to hit the ground like this. And he'll take two or three until he hits the ground just the way he wants the club to behave on the ground. And then he'll walk in and, you know, and get through and hit the shot. So I think to your point, I think it's very, very important that, you know, that you're taking those educated hands, but you're also intently going to strike the club on the floor somewhere. And he's never afraid to hit the floor with it. Now, of course, you're right in saying his hands are leading through the strike here. There's definitely no real dig. So there must be some upward getting up and out and around the corner and releasing the club head so that the leading edge doesn't drive down and hit it. He doesn't have a huge amount of bounce on this 60 degree wedge. So there must be things happening in order for the club not to be driving into the ground. I know that's a little bit of a sort of a hot-ish topic these days. And I think there's definitely a lot more to the physics of how the golf club is presented to the floor and what's going on exactly with the pivot and with the body, so that a club that's leaned forward with the shaft does not dig into the ground. There must be something happening, to your point, to get that club up and out of the ground that we're kind of aware of through, you know, some of the analysis that we've seen with high speed cameras and things like that. But in Brian's case, it's, you know, I would call it pretty neutral. He doesn't go down and get it too hard. He doesn't lean the shaft too much. And he's able to therefore create great versatility. And that's, you know, something I like from a short game or a full swing perspective. If you can get it pretty neutral, you can tend to go one way or the other a little bit easier.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think he's not Spieth or Scheffler, who tend to put the leading edge on the ground probably and sustain that a little bit longer through the strike. You know, maybe, I don't know, 80% of the time, just throw a number out there. And then, you know, you go to the other extreme, and it's Steve Stricker, who I watched around the short game area last week, and I sent some videos to Parker McLaughlin, and because he just loves that technique, and he was we were sharing some ideas on it, and Steve probably is not gonna, he's gonna keep the leading edge off the ground probably 80% of the time, you know, and Brian, to me, I think he kind of fits in between, and I think probably most guys do. It is a debate in the industry, I guess, to some degree, in that the attack angle. I think the attack angle is one question, and how steep is the attack angle? And then I think the second is how long are you going to kind of keep the leading edge engaged, right, through the strike? Like those are kind of the two components. And because you can be, you know, kind of steep on it, which, you know, you look at Brian here, like he's hinging it up, which he does in his full swing too. I mean, he's hinging it up. It's coming down fairly steep, but he gets it out of the ground quick. Mm-hmm. You know, Mickelson can hinge it up and hinge. Go ahead.
Well, interestingly, when we started to look at the work that Victor was doing, and I was actually at the Ryder Cup, was having a conversation with Mark Blackburn on the bus It only took us about 3 hours a day to get in and out of the venue. But and I was saying, you know, if we're measuring attack angle and we know the clubs, and let's say we're going to go, just say for the sake of argument, we're going to go 15 down. We've got some shaft lean. If we've got those two components, if we're thinking of attack angle as an ongoing measurement, then that club would dig into the floor. So we would therefore have to measure something like exit angle in order to understand why that club. And I think that's where you said it a couple of times. You said he gets it up and out of the ground quickly.
Yeah.
So then when we go to the pivot, the player's pivot, as they're able to, you know, move up and around the corner, let's say, quickly. Well, then, you know, somebody like Victor, for example, who would have a very strong attack angle into the golf ball, would have to then also have a very, very strong exit angle out of the golf ball. And certainly from a high-speed perspective, I think that's what we've been seeing with Victor's pitching. Now, of course, that's going to create a nice or a low point at the bottom with some sort of shelf at it. But it could be argued that Steve Stricker's shelf and his 3D flat spot or low point, whatever you would want to call it, like that, his may be elongated a little bit more. But, you know, and the guys at, you know, Ping have done a nice job talking about that with some of their research with Victor. You know, the longer that 3D flat spot, perhaps the more debris that we could encounter as we get to the golf ball. But also, we're going to be less inclined to need timing to put the club on the ball correctly. So certainly, I think of attack angle and exit angle, and that's not something we measure just yet. But that might be something they may do in the short game in the years to come.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And you know, with Brian, it's. And so many, there's this, the ability to get it out of the ground. And I think that's where the great hands come from. Yes, you got to hinge it. Yes, you know, the club face awareness. But it's that club head coming in, that point of entry, and then how they get it out of the ground. And I think that education in the hands is really where the brilliance is. Quick story before we go to a swing. I don't know if I've told this before, but when I was working at Golf Channel, I did playing lessons with the pro with Mark Calcavecchia down in Jupiter. And we get there and it had been raining all night and the place was soaked, just soaked. And he's like, yeah, guys, come over here around the green. We'll just do something right here. And so I'm kind of looking where the carts pull up and it's this into the grain, soaking wet area. I'm like, man, really? This is where you want to do it right here? He's like, yeah, right here. We'll throw some balls down. We're fine. So I'm thinking to myself, if I'm hitting this shot into the green wet and matted down with a 60, I mean, that's just razor blades for me, right? Mm-hmm. And so he gets in there, and I am not kidding you, Justin. We did the show, and I'm telling you, everybody pulled away, and I went back and looked around, and you could barely tell he hit probably 15 shots there. I mean, this guy's getting the club in and out, boom, boom, just phenomenal hands, Calcad, right? Right. And I just like, that's a professional golfer right there. That's a professional golfer right there that hit those shots around the green. All right, let's move on here. So here's that turn in the corner. Those watch this. I love Brian Harman's swing. I just love how that club just turns the corner and exits back around. When we say turn in the corner, folks, what that means is as he comes down, and I was a stop in the impact here, right here, say. And from this moment, how the hands in the club are going to exit, not – let's say out to left field for Brian or even down the line. What he does exceptionally well is he gets it to exit back around to the right. And if you see that shaft, you can see how it gets kind of underneath that right shoulder. Mm-hmm. And it's released. I mean, that club's pointing out towards the ball target line. So he's released it under his right shoulder. It's not up in his neck area. And so he's gotten that club to really turn the corner through the rotation of his body. I heard someone saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that he was trying to get the club maybe just pointing a little more right at the top, just a touch more laid off. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, my kind of analysis with that would be that for me, a golf club shouldn't really point in, let's stick to Brian, so we're clear, left-handed. In his case, the golf club should not be pointing parallel to the target line until it reaches parallel to the ground. Mm-hmm. So with an 8-iron here, this is actually this is a warm-up, I think, before the round, we played that unbelievable round at Hoylake on the Friday. So I think he's using an 8-iron there. So if you take it to the top with the 8-iron, I would say he would then be three or four clicks short of parallel. And the golf club at that point at the top of his backswing should therefore be online, which I would say is still going to be a hair to the right of target as we look at it. If therefore we're seeing players who would have swings that are shorter and the club starting to move across the line, I would say that that club shaft and golf club is not very well balanced. And there is going to be an impact in that later on in the ensuing movement. And I think that, one of the features of his iron play has been able to, coordinate that a little bit better so it stays more on plane. There's no like late dropping of the club head as it just comes down into the delivery area, and he's able to then maintain pressure on it the whole way through his sort of impact sequence, if you like, thinking about it like pitching, the same sort of idea that we did. It's not coming up and out of the ground, it's being turned down around the corner well then with his irons. And I think from a really well balanced, I hesitate to say on plane, the sound old fashioned these days at the top of the swing. He gets it in a really, really good spot there. Then he can let a lot of his kind of brilliance take over.
Yeah, I mean, I think the integrity of the shaft to the, let's say, to the base of the plane, right, or the ball target line, where, if I was to draw a line just inside the ball through the butt of the club, like that whole shaft would be pretty much on that line. And I think, one of the things that gets lost in social media is being a little bit more laid off and actually being laid off. Like, those are two very different statements.
100%.
Right. So
yes,
that right there, folks, because this is a conversation, Justin, with the pod that I will get feedback on in this term. When you look at Brian right there, he is not laid off. Now, he may feel like he's a little more laid off relative to what he was doing before, as Justin was describing, but he's not laid off. Now, if I was to draw a line from that ball through the butt of the club, and let's say the club head was, pointing well to the right of that for a left-handed player, well, then now he's more laid off, right? Or now he is laid off.
Yeah.
And so it's a tricky term, but I just wanted to clarify that. And, frankly, I think when you look at kind of where – Rory's at with his swing versus how he used to swing it, to me, that's kind of the conversation. I was texting with someone with Rory. He used to rotate the lead arm and the shaft much more early and get that shaft pointing more like that. And now he's definitely got it a little bit more vertical, which is, not the end of the world, right? More vertical and across. You can still shallow it and do those things. But it is interesting the way that someone used to swing it versus maybe the way they swing it now. And the point I'm making, there's a great video, Justin, you've probably seen it with Brian. I think he probably looked like 9 years old working with Jack Lumpkin. Mm-hmm. And his swing, it's just very similar. I mean, it is up and down the line just like this.
Yeah. The one thing I would add to that, especially for those sort of listening at home, I mean, everybody has got some little – like, let's call them physical characteristics in their golf swing. If Brian has any characteristics, he would tend to be a little bit of an early extender in the backswing. We would have measured him at 1.4, 1.6 inches of extension with a driver. So when the hub moves forward like that, the arms will tend to sort of grab back to try and rebalance things, and that will then pitch the club across the line. So, elite level rotator, one of the best in the world, but he still has his own little swing characteristics that we have to kind of navigate. And when we allow him to load his trail side properly and remain aware of where that club pitches at the top of his backswing, then he can really, like we said a couple of times, get around the corner, keep pressure on the golf ball and hit a very, very straight penetrating shot and be less, required to turn everything in from left to right, which is, a little bit more of what his natural DNA would be. Without, I think that's something I try to do, Travis, with them is, try to, work with the player. Don't change completely. Like, I never want to turn Brian Harman into a fader of the ball. But if he's got a left-hand flag, I want him to be able to aim 15 feet right of it and hold the ball straight at the flag and not have it, turning into the right corner of the green.
So you look at Brian here from Face On. I want to ask you two things about his pattern here. One is he Brian's kind of an early setter, right, of the wrist. He kind of looks like he kind of always has been, right? Kind of always kind of sets the wrist maybe a touch early, gets the face to rotate a bit. Almost very similar to what we saw in the short game. And the second is his feet His left foot pretty square, right foot definitely flared out more than his left. Has that always been pretty neutral with him? Does he ever flare the left foot a little bit more? Is that something that you guys have dabbled in, maybe like in the pursuit of a little more distance? I mean, give me the background on the feet, and then also just kind of this early setting of the wrist, maybe then from what we've seen with some other players.
I would say that he's a big Lee Trevino fan. What Mr. Trevino did through his career rightly so. So I think he was one of those players that Jack and Brian would have kind of looked at and sort of emulated a little bit from a setup standpoint. I think the only time we've had to really draw his awareness to that is really trying to work hard on his alignment, like narrowing the parameters of his alignment all the time, making sure that he's aware of, you know, the fact that, you know, when he looks down at his toes, they're not going to be square because his right foot is so much more flared than his left. With regards to his takeaway, I agree with you. He's always had that beautiful set. You know, more recently, you study all these things in golf. I've studied waggles. The best players in the world, their waggles and how they move the club and do things. I mean, Hogan had an incredible waggle from face on. You would see the butt of the golf club going in front of the golf ball. You would see the shaft rotate back, but you would never see the face open too much. So recently, Brian and I have had a conversation about the fact that I want him to make a very on-plane waggle when he's using his iron, with the sweet spot never rolling open to the plane. So even though we're only talking about a golf swing that's getting to kneecap high, I want to make sure that sweet spot is on plane with the golf ball as he's waggling it. And that's something we're working hard on in practice, because his tendency, as you know, would be to like roll a little more loft on it in his waggle. And if he gets a little too much loft on it, you can imagine with that little bit of, you know, early extension, club across the line, club falling under, that's where he gets a kind of an annoying weak shot, you know, in his case, going off to the left, which thankfully, when he gains 9 strokes at Sawgrass, he hasn't hit too many of them last week.
So I think that probably shows up a little more of the driver, you think, that little flare to the left?
Well, he's, you know, he's got a dynamic pivot on swing catalyst. You'll see he actually has a lot of like zigzag back, so pressure can go back towards the sort of center of his stance, in and around about the impact area. And I think with the driver, with the low vertical swing plane that he has, he actually kind of has the ability to lower the swing plane even more and really go around the corner and still draw it. Something I want to have a conversation with him about is just the way he draws it, the way he goes about drawing the ball these days, because I think he's so much more neutral, it's almost harder for him to draw it.
Yeah, vertical swing plane is an interesting number. And for those listening, we'll go back to this real quick. It's really the measurement of the handle here at Impact. I didn't get it. It's so really Hogan, a measurement of...
You know, and again, yeah, I always think of Brian as a left-handed Ben Hogan a little bit. I mean, Hogan actually returned the club almost below where he took it, which is incredibly talented. Brian has a similar action to that. Most of us mere mortals, Travis, I don't know about you, get the handle up a little bit higher.
For sure.
That stalls our rotation a little bit. So, yeah. You know, but again, you know, your great strength can be a weakness. And if you get a vertical swing plane that gets even too low and too rotary, it's hard to get the shaft up and get pressure down on the golf ball. It'll tend to start to path you a little bit more, in his case, to the left. And I think, again, he gets away with a little more of that with his driver than he would have done with his irons. And through tidying some of those things up, he can get more hit on it and a better start line with most of his irons.
Yeah, you can see the handle there, folks, at Impact, for those watching. I mean, it's pointing, say, belt buckle area. It's that measurement of the shaft, that vertical swing plane. And so many, you know, in amateur play, and even sometimes with professional golfers, you have to, it's something you got to look at. And, you know, that handle can get pretty high, you know, for a lot of amateurs. And the reason for that can stem from what's happening before that, right? And what's happening in the pattern, the backswing and the downswing. So it's a deeper conversation than we probably have time for right now on that vertical swing plane. But you certainly see so many great ball strikers like Brian there and Harmon and Hogan, as you mentioned, that can return it right there pretty much where they started. Nick Faldo was a lot like that as well. All right, before I let you go, because I know you got some buddies in town, let's talk about Harris here real quick. I like following you in another Georgia Bulldog here. Harris English. I always see you working on. I always see you working on his backswing, and he's kind of rehearsing some things. Let's say, you know, as for those watching here, we take this back slow. I see him kind of stopping the club right here when the shaft's parallel. I see him stopping the club right here when the left arm's parallel. And then sometimes, almost like he kind of goes A, then B, and then he kind of almost from there winds up and hits it. Like, what's going on there?
I think a couple of things. You know, Harris, we've navigated the surgery 2022, Valentine's Day, he had the surgery on his right hip.
Yep.
He lacked internal rotation on his right side, which would obviously impinge his overall rotation to the right in the golf swing. Whenever there's any sort of, let's say, anything stopping or preventing rotation in the golf swing, something else is going to compensate for that. So what Harris would have done, aligned with his concepts of the golf swing, which would be width and depth, is he would tend to pull his arms back to create rotation in his swing. So he would actually like retract his right shoulder, he'd pull the handle back, he would really steepen the shaft as he was getting through halfway back. And then from the top of the backswing, his left wrist would be kind of cuppy. He would be in a position where he would do a beautiful little change of direction and he would get away with it. And he said to me in the back end of last year, he said, look, if I'm going to really be as dominant as I want to be, I need to be a better wedge player and I need to be better at flighting the ball. And I said, well, we're going to have to get the golf club into better places through the mid to end parts of your backswing so that if you have to hit a half shot, you know, if you stop it anywhere halfway up there, Travis, I mean, if he takes it to, you know, halfway back and then has to hit a wedge shot, well, it needs to be well balanced to do that. And from the place where he was retracted and his shaft was steep, his arms were very deep. The shaft is then going to fall. The face is already open. He's aware of that, and he then, you know, really puts the afterburners on, and he tended to hit, you know, like some pulls with his short irons and maybe the occasional big flare with his short irons. So, you know, in responding to his requirements, you know, Ryder Cup player, you know, we got a two or three wins together, but he said, look, I've got to get the golf club into a place through my golf backswing where I can hit a flighted iron shot or I can hit a wedge shot. And his wedge numbers are getting better. We still navigate between a couple of these little things in the mid part of his backswing, but what a golfer he is. You know, when he starts to get it on repeat, he makes it look like it's on a PlayStation. And with the exception of a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a, you know, mental went to sleep on Saturday at the Players, I think he'd have been right into the mix. You know, he was 2 under after 2 on Saturday and made a bogey, 3 bogeys and a double, and didn't quite, you know, ended up shooting 75. And then he was 6 under after 8 on Sunday. And he's, you know, he's in a really good spot. I'm really proud of the work he's done. And nobody works harder. And I'm very lucky to be working with these Bulldogs. They probably make me look a lot better than I really am, Travis.
So wider, so right here, his hands are a little bit wider. They're out in front of him.
Well, his concept was always width, you know, so if you can imagine if we've got a slight. Start to try to do is we're going to try and like separate. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to have to be separated. So, you know, now that he's, you know, fully healthy, it's really like, to be honest, it would be narrower and more organized on the in the first half of his backswing and then wider as he takes it to the very top.
So from here, he feels wider, and then that shaft rotating a little bit more. Like it's,
I would say, he feels for him right there. He probably feels a lot narrower there. Things probably feel closer to him. The club feels more in front of him, and then the encouragement from there would be, well, go ahead and stretch it up to the top, and you'll get as much like Davis Love as you want at the top of your backswing, as opposed to doing all the widening really early.
Early, I got you. Yep. And then it just hit right. I mean, it's like so many of these guys, and I'll finish with this. You know, one of the things that people will come back on is that the only thing that matters is impact. And it's like, well, you know, I think every teacher understands impact is what matters. But the reality is most of these guys and women, and even when you're developing an amateur player, there's work to be done in the backswing to make impact more repeatable. And so, you know, the backswing has value. It matters. In fact, you know, I talk to you guys a lot on the podcast and coaches and oftentimes I would say, geez, I don't know what the number would be, 70%. It's backswing related. Like you're trying to get things a little more structured, a little more organized for them to just be instinctive and hit it. right? And so, you know, we just went through Harmon and we just went through English and there's others. You see Justin Thomas, you know, rehearsing this stuff, you know, going back. You see all these, you see Sung J.M. trying to, he's looking at the club for crying out loud, going back with his head. I mean, they're trying to get things a little cleaner going back so they can be instinctive coming down. And when you're developing an amateur golfer, you know, it may not be the exact same things. It could be some more wholesale changes in the club face and just the overall complete shape of the backswing and fixing a sway and getting the pivot to be tighter overall. But all those things just make it a little bit easier in the change of direction and what you're going to do instinctively through impact.
100%. You know, when you take, you know, these guys are, you know, from a Georgia perspective, they're generational talents, right? They know how to move through the golf ball. They've been doing this at an extremely high level for most of their lives and all of their adult lives. So, you know, you've got to give them great structure at the start. You've got to make sure the club and the body is well balanced. And then, fortunately, with these fellas, a lot of the time, they're going to be able to go ahead and pull the trigger and let it go around the corner. I mean, Harris and I talked about that position right there. You remain on the screen with, you know, a little bit more chase. Again, when there's an under rotation going back and the arms have kind of pulled back and got a little bit out of sequence, sometimes we see a little bit more chasey look on the way through. So there are conversations like that. We don't have many of those conversations at tour events. And that's why we're, you know, very lucky to have this fabulous performance center here to get some of that work done. So it's good to work with these guys. And I think to your point, you know, sometimes if you're going to get deeper into the weeds of the golf swing, you know, that's certainly when you want to do that away from certain big tournaments like the Players Championship last week.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. All right. Good stuff. I appreciate your time, Justin. I'm setting your over-under today playing Sea Island at, 72.5?
Yeah, 74 yesterday on Plantation. Very average, like 40 feet all day, three putts. Not very inspiring. I'll let the other boys do the inspirational thing for me.
All right, buddy. Go play. I appreciate your time, man.
Cheers, Travis. See ya.